Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Loftin. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Dodges the man at the 5. Into the end zone. Touchdown! Fred Jackson. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Ah! Woohoo!
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Pressured, and he is sacked. It is Marcell Dareus, Mr. Big Stuff.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Tonight, joining Murph for defensive lineman Alan Branch, Hall of Fame running back Thurman Thomas, and former Bills tight end Jay Reimersma. That and your phone calls tonight on The John Murphy Show.
This place is pandemonium!
Buffalo ball! Kiko Alonso picks up the tip pass for the interception!
Live from One Bills Drive. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
A two-hour break from all of the hockey talk the next 2 hours. Welcome, good evening, the John Murphy Show, live from One Bills Drive, live from Ralph Wilson Stadium, from our radio broadcast booth in the stadium, and happy to have you with us tonight. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to talk football, Bills football, NFL football over the next 2 hours here. Get off the hockey talk for a couple of minutes, and we welcome you to join us. Phone lines are open with whatever you'd like to talk about. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show as well. Give us your thoughts on what's going on with the Buffalo Bills or anything else in the news these days. The Buffalo Bills news seems to center on offense and their major struggles on offense against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was a tough one back on Sunday. That loss lingers, I know, for many Bills fans. The football team here itself trying to put it behind them, trying to move forward, looking ahead to the New York Jets in the final six games of the season. But we thought we'd throw this out there for debate and discussion tonight. The Bills offense, just 10 points scored against the Pittsburgh Steelers. 13 points scored in the loss the week before against Kansas City. 17 points scored the week before in the loss at New Orleans. Prior to that, the Bills were more than 20 points per game for the first seven games this year. Now, everything wasn't running smoothly, I won't tell you that, but they were offensively fairly productive. Want to know tonight from our listeners, from you, and you can call up and let us know, what is wrong with the Buffalo offense and what would be your fix? What one thing would you do to straighten out the Buffalo offense for this week against the Jets and the final six games of the season? There are a lot of theories out there, a lot of complaints out there, a lot of griping about what went wrong in the Steelers game, and a lot went wrong for the Bills offensively in that game. I hear many things. I hear people talking about play calling. Maybe you think play calling is the solution. Not so sure that it is. I don't really have a major problem with the plays that were called. Keep this in mind. The guy calling the plays for the offensive slowdown over the last 3 weeks was calling the plays for the first seven games when they were getting more than 20 points per game. And there's this. There's the quarterback spot. To me, that would be the one fix I would make for the Buffalo Bills offensively. Fix what's going on with the quarterback, now E.J. Manuel. They went through a four-week period with Thad Lewis and then Jeff Toole, and clearly they did not have real solid NFL quarterbacking during that four-week period. To me, the number one thing they could do this Sunday and through the remainder of the season to get the offense going again is to get the quarterback play going again and to get E.J. Manuel going. You know, get his, you know, he's only had the limited number of starts so far this season, six NFL starts. There are people out there who have given up on him already, which I find astounding after six NFL starts. Really, first-round draft pick, you've seen enough, toss him to the curb, bring in the next one. That is amazing to me. But I know I've heard that on the show on Monday when we opened up the phone lines. What would you do to fix the Buffalo offense? There are people who think it's as simple as giving the ball more to C.J. Spiller. Articles written about that, discussion about that in the locker room today. We had a lively debate in our little office in at One Bills Drive in our little digital media office about that today. I think that's a phony issue. You mean to tell me if C.J. gets 25 carries and the Bills would have more wins, how many more wins would they have? I don't think that's a solution at all. C.J. asked about it today, kind of poo-pooed it. He said he didn't think that was an issue at all. The number of work, the number of carries he got, the number of plays he got, he was only on the field for 22 plays, offensive plays against the Pittsburgh Steelers, only got 8 carries. They weren't running the ball well, either C.J. or Fred Jackson. They weren't blocking well for either C.J. or Fred Jackson in the run game. That's where the problems were against Pittsburgh up front, offensive line. That might be the way to go. That might be the fix they need in the near future. It's hard to, you know, personnel-wise, it's going to be hard to switch anybody out at this late part of the season, but it could be offensive line is the biggest problem with the Bills offense right now. I don't think giving the ball to C.J. Spillermore is a cure-all. In fact, I think it's more of a symptom of what's going on with their offense and not the reason why their offense is struggling. C.J. doesn't he's had the injury for one. I mean, how many games out of the 10 would you think C.J. Spiller was healthy? Healthy, really healthy to play in. What do you think? I'm going to say maybe 5 of the 10 he's been healthy. I mean, healthy enough to make a difference in the game, half the games maybe. There's that, and there's the fact that he's not running the ball well and doesn't have a lot of holes to get through because of what's going on up front. So the simple solution, give C.J. the ball more and everything will be all right. No, I don't think that's the case at all. We want to hear from you, though. Those are my thoughts. The phone lines are open. What is wrong with the Buffalo offense, and how would you fix it, both this week against the Jets and moving forward into the future? The phone lines are open, 803-0550. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can reach us and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Maybe you think they need more targets. Maybe you think they need better wide receiver play. You're looking at a game this Sunday against the Jets when they certainly are not going to have Robert Woods and may not have Stevie Johnson because of injuries. I mean, that's going to be a problem with those if those two targets are out. Maybe that's the solution. But what is your solution? How would you fix what's wrong with the Buffalo Bills offense? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, the number to call. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Lines are open right now. We'll start with Mike in Wheatfield. Mike, hello. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph. Good to talk to you.
Hi.
I think the thing is that even like in the Kansas City game, we're running the ball. I mean, we're making good yardage against a good defensive team. You get to the goal line, and he changes the call, Hackett or whoever it is, to have this kid Tool. He's not a, I mean, you know, he's a undrafted free agent. Throw the ball. I mean, you run it down their throats. If you don't make the touchdown, I'm saying you go for it on fourth down. Now they got to start from the 1 yard, the goal line, and we got a pretty darn good defense. But this thing of, like, giving up on the run, on the goal line, I mean, yeah, you got to pass the ball. You're right. You can't expect C.J. to do everything. But
well, they ran it on first.
When you're down there.
In Kansas City, in the Kansas City game, they hammered Fred Jackson, you know, on first and second downs and did not get in the end zone.
But I agree with that, Murph. But you know what? Then you run a third and you run a fourth. You don't give up on the game. That's how we got down to the 1 yard line. Murph was the running game, correct?
Well, they were running the ball pretty well. There's no question about that. Why wouldn't you? They're damned if they do and damned if they don't. If they don't get in, which they didn't, in fact, through the interception, they should have done the other thing. I think that they're running the ball a lot in that game and ran it pretty well, including down around the goal line.
Right, but I mean, you got a kid. I mean, if it would have been maybe manual or whatever, but this kid had never started a game, or I think he maybe started one. I might be incorrect on that.
No, he didn't.
I mean,
that was his first.
It was first. Okay, he threw a bad pass, and I'm saying it's not like you got Jim Kelly back there.
Right.
Or who knows when we'll ever have a Jim Kelly back there again. Hopefully, this manual is the answer, but I still believe you got to run it down their throats, and we got a defense that's pretty darn good. And you know what, too? We could be actually 5-5 or 6-4. We lost two games at the last second field goal, and I think we could have beaten Kansas City. So we could be 6-4 in the playoff hunt. I think this team has got a great future. So,
all right.
I'll listen to what you have to say.
Thanks,
Murph.
Mike.
Thanks for calling.
Let's take a call from Joe in Marilla. Hello, Joe. Welcome. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, John. It's Jim, actually.
Okay. Hi, Jim.
Hey, I just wanted to chime in. I don't have, you know, the magic solution, but just a couple of things, especially, you know, with the wide receivers, key wide receivers being out. It would be interesting if they ran, you know, more of a two-back set with Spiller and Jackson on the field, and maybe once in a while, like Chan Gailey was doing, sending C.J. Spiller out wide as a receiver. He did fairly well on that. The other thing with on the goal line, I'm just wondering why we don't give the fullback the ball and let him try to pound it in.
Mm-hmm. The goal line, and we'll tell you this, the goal line definitely has the attention of the head coach. In fact, Marone talked about it at length today about how the Bills have been pretty effective in third and, you know, short situations and yet so ineffective down near the goal line. I think that's eating them up a little bit. And I like your idea. We saw that a little bit in training camp. I think they call it their pony backfield when they have both Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller back there. We saw that in training camp, saw it a little bit in preseason, and there was one game earlier this year when I think they unveiled it a little bit, but I kind of like that idea. And using C.J. as a receiver, I'd be down with that. I'd be up with that. Let's go to Patrick in Orchard Park. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I think that they need to design the offense around the talent that they have. instead of what they're doing now. You know, they need to go to a spread. And I think C.J. Spiller would be better in the running game if he was back in the spread offense. You know, take at least one of your Olympic track stars and just send them deep. Even if you don't throw them the ball, you're going to take that safety with you some of the time. And I think that would open up our running game more. I think we run the ball up the middle too much. So I think if you go to the spread, it would change the whole outlook of what's going on with our offense right now.
Okay, spread it out. Let's go to Willie in D.C. Hi, Willie. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, John? I think that at this point in the season, a lot of tape is out on Buffalo. So I think they're going to have to switch it up a bit, get a bit more aggressive with the play calling, do a couple of bubble routes. I mean, maybe some good passes to the a couple of fake runs and then dish it out a little shovel pass or something. But Mo's definitely more aggression towards the play calling. Maybe try to go a deep quickly. As I'm looking at a lot of these other games, the teams that are winning, like the Denvers and things of that nature. I mean, they go out there and of course they're gonna run the ball and all, but they get that ball out there. I mean, they're going for three plays down field on you immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's something that has worked for us to kind of get teams off balance. I mean, even Jeff Toole had over 200 yards passing on a great defense. And you know, when you sit back and you kind of think about that, it's like, okay, here it is, Jeff Toole, Thad Lewis. These are guys that, I mean, I'm not talking bad about them, but I mean, they might not be on the team come next year. Or if they are, they're back on the practice squad in some type of way. But so they're going out there and they're playing and they're giving it their complete all. So, I mean, like when you're playing like that, of course, you're going to try to throw the ball as much as you can. You're going to try to run the ball as much as you can to try to prove your worth. And it's causing them to play aggressive play. And I think that's what E.J. Manuel needs to help the run game and to help the offensive line not look so bad. It's just go out there, just throw the ball. Let the wide receivers make the play. Let the tight end make the play. Let the running back make the play. You know, just go out there and just gun it.
All right, I got what you're saying, Willie. Let me say this, and I mentioned the show from the Bulldog how I've watched a couple of Jets games yesterday and today, and I haven't yet to go back and watch the Bills Jets game from Week 3. But one thing that struck me, and I think it's a function of Geno Smith having just more reps, more starts than E.J. Manuel. I mean, he started every game. He has not been hurt. And so what he's got 10 starts, right? 9 starts, Geno Smith. E.J. has 6 starts. And I can almost see it in their approach offensively. There was a certain element of the Jets offense under Marty Morningwake of kind of, I don't know how to put it, unleashing Geno Smith, taking the wraps off of him, realizing that he's going to make a bad decision. He's going to make a bad throw from time to time. On the other hand, he's going to make a good throw from time to time and a big athletic play from time to time. He ran it in from, I want to say, about 8 or 10 yards out into the end zone against the Saints a couple of weeks ago. And I'm sure it was not the play that was drawn up. But for some reason now, 9 starts under his belt, Geno Smith seems comfortable enough to play football. And based on what I saw last week, and I know it was first game back after 4 games out, I don't get that same comfort level feeling from E.J. Manuel yet. Has he studied the offense yet? Is he a command of all the plays in the playbook? Yeah, there's no question about that. Is he comfortable in the offense, comfortable in what he's asked to do, and comfortable yet to just play football, to take a chance downfield from time to time? No, I don't see that yet from E.J. Manuel. I look forward to that day. I think it's coming once he settles in a little bit. Let's go to Paul in Hamburg. Hi, Paul. Welcome. You're on the John Murphy Show.
How you doing, John? Yeah, I kind of like what you were saying about just have E.J. start throwing the ball more, intermediate and deep passes, you know, and start taking some shots down the field with, like, Marquise Goodwin. I'd probably send him deep 3-4 times a game and just throw it out to let him run under the ball. I mean, you know, he's got the speed and E.J.'s got the arm. Another thing is I get C.J. Spiller out in space. I designed some plays for him where he can get out in space and use his speed and quickness, you know, to take advantage of defense.
All right, good ideas. I as far as E.J. you know, throwing the ball deep, he's going to need pass protection. I think that's been an issue against Pittsburgh, even though he got sacked once? I know, one to three times. I can't remember. The interception he threw, the Ryan Clark interception, he was definitely pressured. And he kind of threw it on the run, trying to scoot away from the pressure. And I think he needs a little bit more protection than that in order to avoid that sort of throw, because I do think he has the kind of arm to throw it deep if he's well protected. John in Buffalo. John, welcome. You're on the air.
How you doing tonight?
Great.
I had to disagree with a little bit with your first comments where you were saying how they were really struggling with the run a lot. I don't know if you were really just talking about the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah,
I
was. Oh, yeah. Yeah, just Pittsburgh.
I think if you checked out Fred Jackson's stats, he was probably averaging close to 5 yards a carry for the game. And it seems like they can run the ball, and that disturbs me a little bit that the Bills are a good rushing team, and they have a good rushing defense, which usually leads to wins. I mean, so that to me, when you have a team like that, and, you know, Manuel struggled a little in the Pittsburgh game, but I think really looks like a veteran practically. I was so shocked this first few games just to see how calm and patient he is in the pocket.
Yeah.
Almost a little too patient.
Yeah, I was talking about the Pittsburgh game. They've got a good running attack. They're seventh in the league in rushing yards. Fred Jackson's had good yardage. Even CJ, whose numbers are down, is averaging like 4.6 yards per carry. Fred's averaging 4.3. They run the ball well. They did not run the ball well against the Steelers last week. And the reason they didn't, I think, because the Steelers were, crowding the box, playing the run, daring E.J. Manuel to beat him deep, and he could not. And that's why I go back to, and if you ask me, what's the biggest problem with the offense? It's quarterback play. It was four games of less than, competent quarterback play when E.J. was out, and it was a game last Sunday against the Steelers when E.J. looked rusty and looked like he had a long way to go, and the learning process continues. We're going to hear from Doug Marone about that in a minute. We're going to squeeze in one more call. It is Dylan in Chicago. Dylan, good evening. Welcome. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, Murph, how are you?
I'm okay.
Good. So, yeah, I would have to say that, you know, I agree. It boils down to the Manuel and his maybe inability to not inability. He's coming off an injury, had some time off, and he just needs to, you know, go through his slow things down, slow his footwork down, and let the plays progress. So I don't think it's really a blame on him. It's just coming back and coming back slowly, and he's not totally ready for that live action. Offensive line's also something we're going to have to identify going forward, maybe a second, third-round pick. I mean, losing Levitre last year was tough, but you can't pay a guard that much money. But, I think you're right. It really boils down to offensive line and the quarterback. But the quarterback, time for the young guy, and I'm not too worried. Let's give him some time. Let him play it out.
All right.
And then just one last thing.
Yes,
one last thing with the fourth-down plays or the goal line plays. I mean, you can't second-guess that play calling. I mean, if you run it four times, it's a poor, and they don't get in, it's a poor play calling. If you pass it and gets in, it's a great play calling. So can't second guess that stuff.
All right. Thanks very much, Dylan. I agree with you. I think it's quarterback play, both EJ as he continues to learn how to play the position and the guys who replaced him. I think it's quarterback play that's holding the Bills' offensive back. For the most part, there are other issues, as Dylan pointed out. Offensive line issues, I believe. I think they need bigger and better targets in the passing game. These are issues that really can't be resolved until the offseason. But we'll continue this discussion. We'll get more phone calls on the air. We do want to update you on the news of the day here from One Bills Drive, the Daily Rundown, Dunn Tire and Kumho Tires Daily Rundown. They're the official tire of the Buffalo Bills, and they've got a special offer for Dunn Tire customers. You can get a $50 instant rebate plus a free Bills cap with a purchase of four Kumho brand tires. DunnTire.com for details. Kumho Tires, let's go. E.J. Manuel ready to start again, and this will be what? His seventh NFL start. Spoke with the media today and admitted that was a discouraging performance for him against the Steelers last Sunday.
That's huge. I mean, it's a loss. Obviously, that's the toughest part about it. It's a loss. You know, obviously, we didn't perform. I know I didn't perform as well as I wanted to, being that it was my first game back, but you can't get discouraged. You have to really look it in the eyes and, you know, come back even harder the next week. Just play how you want to play. And I think that's the biggest thing. We affect our own, outcome of the game. So you just have to go out there and make plays.
How have you adjusted? You don't accept the losing, but the fact is you've lost at this team has lost at this rate more games than you've lost in your college career.
Right.
How do you adjust yourself to that and not accept it, but how do you get, you know, your head around this much losing, something that you've never experienced?
You don't adjust to it. I don't think you want to ever get accustomed to losing a lot. So I think that's the biggest thing. And, you know, just look forward to the next week. If you don't play or if you don't get the outcome you want in that Sunday, it's over with. There's nothing you can do. I can't go back. And we can't go back as a team to that game, the games that we've lost. All you can do is really look forward to the games that you have ahead.
E.J. Manuel talking with the media today. His coach, Doug Marrone, talked about E.J. Manuel today and said, obviously, Manuel coming back last Sunday after 4 weeks off, that was a factor in how he played against the Steelers. Also a factor, his inexperience. Here's Doug Marrone.
People have to understand that, you know, again, having lost those four weeks has hurt him, you know, and he's really coming on. And if you look at it and put things in perspective, and I think it's important, you know, and everyone knows he's our starting quarterback, okay? There's no problem there, and I've been questioned on it before, so I'm going to use your question to answer a couple of things, you know. But then when you look from, you know, quarterbacks with five starts, you know, and you look, go back to 2000 with all the young quarterbacks, you know, he has the third best rating, you know, out of all those quarterbacks. So we've got to keep him coming along. I think I even heard last night, and someone had told me this, Mike Krzyzewski said this, you know, obviously they had a tough loss last night, is that he said, growth comes with experience. And, you know, someone had told me that, and I was thinking to myself, you know what, that's exactly right. And that's the one thing that's going on now. So we expect him to do better. Maybe not because it's the second time he's faced an opponent, but I think more importantly because it's his next game and they keep pushing him that way. But I think, you know, having played them once like that, I think you do have a little bit better feel for what's going on, but it still comes down to going out there and having to produce.
Doug Marrone talking about E.J. Manuel. It is Manuel's, by the way, I thought very good points made by the head coach about, and for lack of a better term, it's patience, you know, and as he said, they expect he'll be better, not because it's the second time against the Jets, but it's because it's another game. He's putting another game under his belt. I think that's important for E.J. Manuel. The game against the Jets was prior to last Sunday, Manuel's most difficult game of his rookie campaign. Marrone talked about that and reaffirmed his faith in what Manuel can do for this offense.
Now is his first away game, you know, against a very difficult schematic defense. We know that. I mean, we do a lot of, you know, some of the same things. I wouldn't say a lot, but some of them. And then when he came back after 4 weeks, again, we throw him right back out there on the road. I mean, there was even talk, I was thinking, hey, should we just wait till the next home game, you know, to put him back out there? But, you know, he needs to be out there. You know, the more he's out there, the better he's getting. And that's what I want to make sure everyone understands. I mean, it's very easy for me. I mean, I truly believe in this quarterback. And I think the one thing I want to make sure that I communicate, and the reason why I brought up those statistics, is because I think this day and age, everyone's so quick to judge and throw things out there on people. You know, but when you talk about since 2000 and you take all those young quarterbacks and you take the five starts, you know, where he's really 2-2 and, for a better sense of the word, a no decision. You know, it's 17-17 in Cleveland. He's driving down. The field goal's given. So depending on how you look at it, it's either no decision or at worst you get the field goal. You know, what's going on? And then what is his record at that time? You know, so, you know, he's shown that he can do it. He's shown that he's progresses, you know, during the course of the year and during, you know, each and every play and each and every game. Sometimes when, you know, when I go back and look at it, I see him getting better as the game goes on. And I think those are the things that you see with a young quarterback. But I think at the same time, if we want to sit here, and when I say we, it's all of us now, and we see a, you know, we see this young guy, we've got to be able to say, hey, listen, let's let this guy develop and let's go, and he's going to get better each week. Because as far as his work ethic and how he goes about the game and all those other things, he's outstanding. The respect that he has from his teammates is outstanding. You know, and now it's just a point of, like you said, you know, when does it ever come to that point where you are that person, where you are that guy? How long it has to be? Well, you got to win. You know, you got to consistently win. And, you know, a lot gets put on his plate for that, you know, but a lot of, you know, the rest of us, including myself and the coaches, you know, we've all got to do our part and we've got to play well, too, around him, you know, for to be successful.
A couple of really important points that Marrone made there, and I'll just summarize. He said, I truly believe in this quarterback. That's important for people to hear that. They're all in with E.J. Manuel. He also said that he's shown that he can do it. I see him getting better as the game goes on. I think that's important to hear also. And at the end when he said they got to play better around him, I think so too. But quarterback play, obviously, to my mind anyway, has been the biggest problem that they've had offensively. And the problems really just cropped up the last three games when they scored 10 points, 13 points, 17 points. Russ Brandon, the Bills general manager, appearing this morning on the Howard Simon Show. He weighed in on E.J. Manuel's progress.
I mean, you look at it from the standpoint with E.J. that, you know, like we've mentioned, he's played five games. And let's keep him on the field. He's 23 years old. He's seeing things for the first time in this league. We all know it's far different than playing in college. So from that point of view, you know, I'm excited about keeping him on the field and see where his growth is by the end of the year. We're very pleased where he was heading before his injury in Cleveland. Obviously, this past week was not the best effort from any of us. But I think that's where we have to go with it and see how he progresses along. With his full complement of players as well. You know, we've had, you know, different things happen where, you know, Marquise wasn't in for a good portion of time when he first, the first four games of the year. Robert Woods was out this past week. Stevie was out a majority of the Cleveland game. So, you know, it's those kind of things that, you know, we'd like to see him with his full complement of players behind him as well.
Russ Brandon, the Bills president, talking about E.J. Manuel, his progress, and where the organization stands with him. Bills practice outdoors right out here on the carpet in Ralph Wilson Stadium today around noontime or so. Very cold, wind chill of about 20. The wind was swirling around, howling. Manuel said it was a little bit difficult, but again, good workout in that. See what it's like to play in the wind here in November and December. Not practicing today for the Bills, wide receiver Robert Woods with his ankle, and Marone ruled him out. He will not play against the Jets this weekend. Stevie Johnson did not practice. He was out in a hoodie sweatshirt. He's got that groin injury. Marone seemed genuinely uncertain as to whether Stevie would play against the Jets. Safety Denoris Searcy did not practice as he nurses a strained hamstring. He is expected back tomorrow. Kyle Williams, defensive tackle, did not practice with his Achilles. He's expected back tomorrow. Three players not practicing for the Jets, including Jeremy Curley, wide receiver, special teamers, got an elbow injury. He did not practice. Defensive lineman Leje Duzabel did not practice with illness. And backup linebacker Garrett McIntyre was out with a knee. Limited practice today for several players, including wide receiver Santonio Holmes with a foot and wide receiver Stephen Hill with a foot and a knee. So that's the Jets injury report. Around the league, just a couple of notes. Kansas City Chiefs are going to have Dwayne Bowe on the field for their matchup against Denver on Sunday. He will start despite being arrested on a charge of speeding and marijuana possession over the weekend. The NFL will review Bowe's situation for potential discipline after the legal process has run its course. Aaron Rodgers, Packers quarterback, says that he has targeted a Thanksgiving matchup with the Lions for his return, and he says he'd like to be back even sooner. As Rodgers says, he's not giving up hope on playing this week. He says he's sleeping through the night. His fractured collarbone, he says, is healing well. And a sad note from the NFL, Todd Christensen, former tight end, five-time Pro Bowl tight end for the Raiders, died this morning in a hospital in Utah due to complications from surgery. He was only 57 years old. He played at BYU, went on to play with the Raiders. He caught 42 passes for 510 yards and four touchdowns in 1982. Christensen really helped redefine the tight end position in the 80s, along with Kellen Winslow and Ozzie Newsome. He went on to be an analyst for NBC after his playing career. Todd Christensen, former Pro Bowl tight end, dead at the age of 57. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. We will get to more phone calls, your thoughts on the Buffalo offense, what's gone wrong, and how do they fix it. We'll get to more phone calls in a moment. But we're going to sit down with Alan Branch, defensive lineman, one of the Bills' free agent signees last April, who's done a really good job of filling in with Alex Carrington's injury. Alan Branch joins us in studio when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO for this Wednesday night, and joining us in studio, veteran defensive lineman Alan Branch. Thanks for coming by, Alan.
I appreciate being here.
Last time I had you in here was the day you signed way back in April. Yeah. Right? That was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a little bit ago.
Did you anticipate this much playing? No one can anticipate injuries, but were you ready to play this many snaps that you played this year?
I was definitely ready to play this many snaps. I mean, when Alex Carrington went down, I definitely got some more snaps on my plate, but honestly, I came in the season, you know, planning on starting anyway. So we had a good little competition during the camp, and AC actually, you know, won the starting job. And once he went down, I was still in that same frame of mind.
He was playing well through training camp really through the early part of the season. Yeah. He was like a revelation early on this season.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely a person that needs to be dealt with when he's on the field. So when he comes back, I'm sure everybody needs to keep eye out on him.
And I see him still in the complex. I mean, he trains here. He works out here, rehabs here. That's good to see that he's still around and still mentally into it, huh?
Oh, he's definitely still into it. And every game he usually, you know, throws a text here or there and, you know, just make sure we got our focus right, or even just, you know, trying to make us laugh, trying to, you know, cut the tension. So yeah. He's still a huge part of the defensive front.
Tell me about the defensive front and how you think you mesh with the pretty talented group with Marcel Darius and Kyle Williams and the guys up front. Tell me how you fit into that group.
I don't know. I guess those guys they're the guys that get, you know, a lot of stats. You know, that's why I kind of see Marcel and Kyle, because they're so explosive and quick. And to me, I'm more of a run stopper, so I take a lot of blocks, and I mean, I do get penetration and disrupt a lot as well, but, you know, I just haven't really had that many opportunities to get on the field and make those stats myself. But, I mean, I'm feeling like I'm disruptive out there, causing havoc, and, I mean, I feel pretty good about my play right now.
It's kind of three different styles among you three when you think about it, right? Kyle is like so quick off the ball and so athletic. I mean, he plays his own way, right?
Yeah, I mean, all three of us, not one of us have, you know, the same type of game. And I think we all kind of, you know, play off each other's strengths. And we know once we start playing a little bit more, we're gelling together. And we kind of know where the other person's going to be or what type of move or play he might make. And we might be able to cheat and make a tackle on the backside or something. So, hey, it's interesting playing with this front.
And Marcel Darius, who seems to be coming into his own as a player. It's got to be fun to watch a young guy like that just get so much better during the course of the season.
I mean, he's been that – this is my first year, so, I mean, it seems like he's been this good since I've been here. So I've never seen a guy his size able to just play on his toes so much and have so much explosion. And, I mean, I think he has 5 or 6 sacks, so – I mean, he's having a hell of a year so far.
Is this position you're playing, this kind of defensive end position, is this what you played before in your previous stops in the league in Seattle, for instance, the last couple of years?
I didn't play this in Seattle because they had Big Red Bryant there. But I actually played this exact spot in Arizona before I went to Seattle. So I have some familiarity with the position.
And why does this position and this defense fit you? What do you think you bring to it? What are your strengths?
Like I said, I like stopping the run. I'm a first, second down guy for, you know, for the most part. I could go in there and get a good pass rush, but I'd say my strengths for sure is, you know, knock back the tackle or guard or even a tight end, depending where I'm lined up at, get some penetration in the backfield and make the job for our linebackers a lot easier, just taking up blocks and, you know, just make it a clear pass for them to run through.
We're talking with Bills defensive lineman Alan Branch, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We talked about the guys up front. You're getting contributions from guys down the depth chart a little bit, too. Corbin Bryan and even Stephon Charles, who sort of came out of nowhere. Canada, I guess, nowhere. But those guys are making plays in the limited time that they've been on the field.
Oh, well, they're definitely making plays. I would say this is a really deep defensive line group that we have on this team. I mean, if one person goes down, I think all of us feel confident that the next person behind them can step up and almost do just as well as the starter on the defense.
What does Coach Weaver preach to you guys? I mean, are there a couple of themes that he hammers on when you're in the practice or in the meeting room during the course of the week?
Not really. I feel like since we have such a veteran group on the defensive front that he doesn't have to say too much. He just, you know, makes sure that we got our mind frame in a right position for the game or in the right place for practice and, you know, just making sure, you know, the P's and Q's are all dealt with. Because, I mean, for the most part, this defensive line group is probably one of the more veteran groups on the team.
Yeah.
And I think he's doing a great job not trying to micromanage and just playing to the strengths that he sees fits for up front.
Do you think that comes from he being a player in the league not too long ago?
I think that's exactly where it comes from. I mean, if you play the position, you're able to relate with the defensive lineman a lot easier. I mean, when you got a coach that never played the spot before and he tells you you got to do this when you're going playing against, you know, 700 pounds of pressure from the offense getting double team or something. I mean, you kind of look at the guy like, you've never done this in your life, but he literally just finished doing this, you know, 3-4 years ago. So, right. I mean, he has a lot of intelligence when it comes to all that stuff.
Hey, Ellen, tell me about last Sunday going against Ben Roethlisberger. He made a couple of plays that are classic Roethlisberger plays. I think about the one, I'm not sure if you were in there. I know Bryant was and maybe Stephon Charles, but it was a second down. They're back at their 16-yard line. You had him surrounded.
I almost got a sack on that play.
You were, man.
I had pressure
from the middle. Less than a foot away from him.
Yeah, I don't know what. He, like you said, he's been doing that for his whole career. Unfortunately, I've been on a couple teams where he's done that a couple times. So
he turns what it looks like it's going to be a sack, maybe from you, into a 34-yard gain. They're at midfield. They go on and score the game's first touchdown. Yeah. He's amazing.
He's definitely a great quarterback, a great player. But, I mean, I feel like if we could have done, you know, something else to get him down, I feel like we could have stopped him. But, like I said, he gets paid, too, and he played a pretty good game.
Coach Marone, I know, talked to you guys and the coaching staff talked to you guys about going against Roethlisberger and how you should go after the ball as opposed to trying to bring him down. Is that the key? I know Marcel stripped the ball out once and he just flopped on top of it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, with him, it depends. You got to know yourself when you're about to tackle Roethlisberger. He's definitely, about 6'5", 265. I mean, I know the program says like 240-something, but the guy's a house to bring down, and you just got to know yourself. Me, I would probably just tackle him normal, but I mean, if you're a corner coming from a blitz trying to get him down, probably the smartest thing to do is to go after that ball.
It had to be I know we're beyond that game, but it was a frustrating game to see the defense, your defense, play as well as you did for big chunks of that game and to come up empty, come up with a loss like that. It had to be a little frustrating to your group.
It's frustrating just because we don't want to play for chunks. We want to play for games, and we didn't play good enough to win the game. So that's all it said. You can say that we did this here and there, this there. But at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is that W or the L. So all we want to do is get the W, honestly.
Well, you get a chance with the New York Jets now, the rematch with the New York Jets this week, and they didn't play last week, but based on their last game, the win against New Orleans, they seem to be playing better now than they were when you saw them back in week three. Huh?
Yeah, they definitely look like they're, you know, getting their feet up under them and, you know, knowing their identity and having a young fella back there. He's starting to come into his own as well, starting to run ball for a lot of, you know, first downs, and knowing, you know, if he doesn't have his open receiver, and, you know, to get all the yards he can. So, I mean, they're doing a lot better as a team. But, I mean, I feel like we've progressively got a lot better as a team as well. We just, like you said, like a few series here or a play here or there, it could definitely change our whole record for sure by a lot.
I was watching the Jets game against New Orleans, watching the quarterback Geno Smith, and it seems to me they're doing a good job of I don't know how to describe it, giving him a freedom to make big decisions, like the touchdown run that he had. He rolls right, he takes a look. He's not real fast or athletic. There are a lot more quicker quarterbacks than he is, but he just makes a decision. He's playing freely, even though he is limited in his experience.
I'd never really played quarterback, so I don't know how free he actually was, but, I mean, he's quick enough. I mean, if you got, you know, man covered, cover zero, from the defense, I mean, you don't have to be too fast to really get some yardage against on a scramble. So
they've got some experience up front on the offensive line, guys who've been around and know how to play a little bit on the offensive line.
Yeah, they got a lot of experience up there, and they got a pretty good front up there. They got Cologne, a couple other guys out
there.
Yeah, Mangold. I play against them since I've been in college. So, I mean, they got a good group, and we just got to bring our best game.
And quick back, Chris Ivory, former New Orleans Saint, you must have faced him before, really runs pretty quickly out of that back.
Yeah, he's a load to bring down, and he's quick with his decision. You know, he'll make one cut and get all the yards he can. And, I mean, that's the type of back that I would want, you know, running the ball as well. So he's a good running back there and, you know, getting all the yards he can.
Alan, it was such a tough loss to the Steelers last week. I wonder, what has Coach Marone and his staff done to sort of get you guys in the right mindset for the upcoming games, including this week against the Jets? What have they been talking about this week?
I mean, I think for the most part they probably talked about just looking at our record and knowing what team we are. You know, our record, it shows what we've performed, but that's not who we are. You know, we're a lot better team. We're in every single game just about, and we're a lot better than, you know, what the record shows. And just know that we could go out there and compete with any team in the league. And I think he's done a good job with that and keeping everybody positive and keeping them ready to go and playing on the field. I mean, we're still excited playing outside, you know, or practicing outside today, and it was freezing. So, I mean, if we're excited for that, I'm sure we're going to be excited for Sunday.
You know, it's funny, when you guys walked out there to practice in the cold in the stadium today, there was a lot of hooting and hollering. I thought, are they complaining or are they into this?
It may have been a little bit of both, you know. But definitely the complaining may have came from me, but I definitely changed my ending when I got on the field and started running around with the guys.
There's a lot of football left here. Six games left here.
Definitely. It's a lot of football.
You guys feel like you got something still to prove this year with the six games that remain?
Yeah, I think we have a lot to prove. Just to show, you know, the way we end this season is going to show everybody the team that we want them to see that we are. You know, we're a Buffalo Bill team that's going to play to the very end. Even in any game that we played, you know, we've played our hardest all the way to the last whistle until the fat lady sung. So we're going to do the same thing for this season. Hopefully we could string some W's together and, you know, start making a splash out there and let everybody know.
Great. Thanks for coming by. No problem, appreciate it. Alan Thanks. Branch, Bills defensive end in studio with us. There's more to come. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Coming to you from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Alan Branch for joining us, Bills defensive lineman. What a good solid pickup he's been. Really, he and Manny Lawson, when you look at what the Bills did in free agency, when they signed those two, neither one was considered a big splash free agent signing, but both of them have been valuable contributors on the Buffalo Bills defense. Alan Branch, thanks to him for joining us on the show tonight. Hey, have you heard the Bills are getting set for an electronic recycling drive coming up Saturday, November 23rd, a week from this Saturday, right here at the stadium, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, November 23rd. The Bills teaming up with Republic Services, hosting an electronic recycling drive here at Ralph Wilson Stadium. So if you have old TVs, computers, cell phones, anything with a plug, this is the place to bring it that day to be recycled safely. For more information and to read the list of accepted items, you can visit buffalobills.com/electronic recycling. No charge. It'll be right in the parking lot, parking lot one, located off Big Tree Road near the Healthy Zone Fieldhouse. Bills alumni will be here, Billy Buffalo and Buffalo Jills. A week from Saturday, November 23rd, the Buffalo Bills and Republic Services electronic recycling drive here at Ralph Wilson Stadium. One more hour to go. We're going to talk with Jay Riemersma, who is coming to town to be the leader of the charge here at One Bills Drive on Sunday against the Jets. And we're going to hear from Thurman Thomas when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's coming to the house. He's doing it again. My man. Touchdown, Buffalo. I like this kind of party, baby.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
Just being able to go out there and move, you know what I'm saying, get the herky jerk back.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
Thurman at the 10, breaks a tackle to the 5. He's in for the touchdown.
The John Murphy Show. Presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour 2 of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. It is Wednesday night. And on Wednesday night, we have the pleasure of talking for a few minutes with the Hall of Fame running back from the Buffalo Bills, Thurman Thomas. He is live on the line with us. Good evening, Thurman. Thanks for being with us tonight.
How you doing tonight, John?
I'm doing great. It's always good to talk with you. We want to let people know that if you have comments or questions for Thurm about anything at all, phone line's open, 803-0550, the number, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I know you're a hockey fan, Thurman, and I noticed one of your tweets today. You did not like the line of questioning for the Sabres press conference today, correct?
Yeah, I didn't like it either. I mean,
what didn't you like?
You know I didn't like it. I did like the fact that, you know, they were trying to get Mr. Bagula and a couple of other guys, Nolan and LaFontaine, to comment on Darcy Regier. You know, that's over. You know, this is what the fans and this is what the media wanted, and they just continued to try to pile to try to get out the story of you know, how it all unfolded. And to me, that's not the media's business. They don't need to keep continuing to write it. They're not here anymore. This is something new for Pat LaFontaine, and I just didn't think that he was needed to be bothered with those questions.
Well, you're a fan, though. Don't you want to know, you know, about the thought process of making that switch? Isn't that a legitimate question?
No, it's not none of my business. They made the switch. That's what they wanted to do. I don't care. I don't care if they sat in the meeting for 5 hours and talked about the bad side of Darcy, the good side of Darcy. You know, it's over with. He's not here anymore. It's time to move on. I mean, we've been hearing it from the media now for the last 5, 6, or 7 years about get rid of Darcy, and it's done. And now everybody wants to know how it unfolded. We don't need. I don't care to know how it unfolded. It happened. Move on.
Wow, that's an interesting perspective. Thurman Thomas is on the line with us. What do you think of the move, Thurman, as a hockey fan?
I love it.
Do you? Why?
I love it. I mean, I got a chance to be here when Coach Nolan was the coach, and when Patty was here playing for the Sabres, and I got a chance to know him, pretty well. I got a chance to meet him a couple of times, so I'm excited about the move. He, in his press conference today, he talked about, the fans of Buffalo, and that's what it's all about. And hopefully he can find a GM and bring winning Sabres hockey back to the Buffalo area. And like I've always said, when the Sabres win and the Bills win, it's always happier people here in Buffalo.
Can I tell you my quick Pat LaFontaine story, Thurman, because it does apply to you. And, well, I said something once that he didn't like and made some comment that he didn't like, and I heard through the grapevine, Patty is really upset with you. You better come and talk to him. So I went to Sabres practice one day and sat down with him. And this was classic LaFontaine. He didn't yell at me. He didn't swear at me. He didn't wave his finger in my face like some other professional athletes might. You know what he did? He said, "I'm really disappointed in you, John. You really let me down." And it really hurt to have Pat LaFontaine disappointed at you. Totally different than some of the treatment I got from some other guys that will remain unnamed.
Well, you know, people handle things in different ways.
Yes, they do.
My point has always been, you know what? Hey, if you can write about me, you can talk about me, I have the right to say whatever I want to say to you back.
Yes.
That's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm good with that, and we're good. We're still good, right? You don't mind that I brought that up?
We're still good. I've been doing a show with you for the past couple of years now, so we're still good.
You're not going to hang up and stalk out or anything? Thurman Thomas is on the line with us.
No, not at all.
Okay. Thurman is with us. If you have comments or questions for Thurm, give us a call. 803-0550 is the number to call. Here's a call from Sean in Florida. Hi, Sean. You're on the air.
Hey, Thurman, I got a question for you. I was just wondering, and John, you can also chime in about the old teams back in the 90s versus now. What do you think we might be lacking just to help us get over that hump? Because we hear about trying to change the culture from losing, especially not having to go to the playoffs so many years. I just wanted to know what you were thinking about that.
Before we get to you, Thurman, let me just – you know what is different? Hall of Fame quarterback, Hall of Fame running back, Hall of Fame head coach, Hall of Fame defensive end. I mean, there's a lot different from your teams in this team, right, Thurman?
Yeah, I think they're, when we talk about, the team now and the team back then, obviously you had some Hall of Fame players and a Hall of Fame coach and really a general manager and Bill Polian who came here and, made some trades right off the bat, to get Cornelius Bennett. Marv wanted and went out and got Steve Tasker. So, Marv and Bill, they did what they had to do to make this football team better. But right now, I think we're still kind of in a learning process with a new head coach, a new general manager, a new quarterback. So there's still time. And I think the only thing that can cure things like that is winning football games. And they've only won 3 so far this year. And I know it's a big step for them to come out and beat a Jets team that, they lost to early in the season. So, it's winning solves everything. And hopefully, these guys can turn it around. I mean, I've always told the guys, and I continue to preach to the guys that, you are not going to be in a better city, a better town when you win football games and go to the playoffs year in and year out and having a chance to win the AFC East and just do good things and win, here at home every single week. The guys haven't felt that since they've been here. And I know Freddie, talks about it all the time about, you know, he's tired of losing and he's tired of being on teams that, you know, that don't even have 500 records. So, yeah, and I know it hurts those players over there, but, you know, you have to go out and play the game. And hopefully, you know, some of the moves that they've made and get some of these guys healthy, hopefully they'll be able to turn around now, whether that'll be, you know, this season or not. But, hey, it's still six more games to go, and I definitely think if they can just, hey, just win one, you know, just give you that confidence just to know how you felt like after the Carolina game, after you felt after the Baltimore Ravens game, you know, try to have that feeling week in and week out, because I think when they went and played Pittsburgh last week, I think they were flat. They didn't come out very excited about the football game, and a lot of players said that we didn't have the energy, and I've always told the guys, you need that energy week in and week out.
Why? How can a team come out flat, Thurman? What did you guys do when you noticed that early in a game that maybe you started out the game a little flat?
Well, you know what, John? We just kind of kept going, you know, and we kind of finally said, okay, well, sooner or later it's going to turn around, because, you know, there were some times where we were favored maybe in New England or maybe in Indianapolis where we didn't play well. We ended up probably winning the football game, but, you know, in the National Football League, when you're overpowering a team and you have better talent, better players, you know, you give them a little breathing room that'll get them excited and say that, hey, we can probably upset these guys today. And that happened to the Bills teams a lot. I think one of the losses that I always remember, I think it was the last game of the season we played in Indianapolis, and we could have had the home field advantage. And we won that game instead of going to Cincinnati. Cincinnati would have came to Buffalo. And we came out flat and just didn't play a good game. We ended up losing that game. But those are the type of games that you try to, you know, you try to just fight your way through or try to maybe get a big play, get a sack or interception or something like that. So, you know, and these players haven't done that. Even in the games where they started off slow, there's always been a mistake here, a penalty there. They eliminate some of those mistakes that they've made early in the game. You know, I think this team would have a better record.
We're on the line with Thurman Thomas, former Bills running back, Hall of Fame running back. Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. A call from Ken in the Bronx. Hello, Ken. Thanks for calling.
John, how you doing, Thurman? What's going on? It feels like Buffalo down here in New York right now.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that, with the weather. I hope this week the Bills beat the Jets. I'm tired of hearing this stuff from the Jets. They think it's going to be a cakewalk. And another thing, Thurman, what was your greatest moment as a Bill, like, on the football field? What was, you know, what do you feel that you still remember? Thank you, Murph.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Well, you know, there's so many, you know, good memories. But I think if I had to pick one memory as far as being a Buffalo Bill, I think and it wouldn't even be the comeback game. I think it would be that first AFC championship game against the Raiders. You know, being at home, you know, up 41-3 at halftime and just kind of looking around the excitement and seeing the fans knowing that, you know what, it's been a long time coming. You know, we finally have put together a pretty good football team that's going to be dominant for a number of years. So I would definitely say, you know, the AFC championship game against the Raiders, where we beat them 51-3.
Here's a call from Kevin in Williamsville. Kevin, hello. You're on the air with Thurman Thomas.
Thank you, John. You know, Thurman, thank you again for all the great years. It was a wonderful run. I was always curious to know the privacy of a playbook and game plans that a player is responsible for. And when a player is traded, for example, yourself, from the Buffalo Bills to the Miami Dolphins, what type of allegiance or privacy or agreement does a player have to keep that playbook private and not maybe take it with them in their brain and in their mind to share with the team they're traded to?
Well, obviously, you know, I think you see it, you know, week in and week out sometimes where, you know, a player might get released from a certain team, and that certain team that they're playing this week might get picked up from the team that they're playing. You know what? A lot can be said. I mean, being on the offensive side of the ball, yeah, I would talk to the defensive players, or guys would talk to the offensive players about, you know, what they might do, what are some of their tendencies. But, you know, once you get out there on the football field, yeah, you might see something, but You know, I had a job, and other players have to have a job to do, whether they're playing offense or defense. And there's only so much you can do with, you know, trying to get tendencies of other football teams. You know, you go through that and get that through watching film throughout the week and watching them play other teams that you might have played throughout the year.
What would be the most valuable thing, Thurman? Like you said, you can see everything you want to see on the video, but, I mean, you know, cadence? Is it checks at the line of scrimmage? Or what would be the most valuable thing outside of the video that you could bring to another team if you were in that position?
Well, I think probably would be, you know, probably something like you say, like your cadence. You know, maybe sometimes, you know, guys would have to switch up some things. Like, I'm sure if you really want to look at it this past year, when Peyton went down and played the Colts down in Indianapolis, I'm sure they knew, you know, some of Peyton Manning's cadence, what some of his dummy audibles and things like that. So you can pick up on some of those things because a lot of the teams around the National Football League kind of use the same kind of cadence, you know, throughout the year. So, you know, it's kind of easy to pick up on, but you have a guy like Peyton Manning who's, you know, been in the league for a long period of time with the Colts, and he's going over to Denver now. I'm sure he's going to try to trade, do something different with his cadence or some of his dummy calls. But, you know, pretty much around the National Football League, everybody kind of uses the same kind of dummy calls anyway.
Here's a call from John in Rochester. John, hello. You're on the air with Thurman Thomas.
Hey, Thurman. You know, you mentioned the January 89 championship game against Cincinnati. You know what I remember about that game? I remember Chris Collinsworth cheap shotting Derek Burroughs in the end zone and knocked Burroughs out of the game. He went after his knee, and he kind of bragged about it after the game. That really ticked me off. You remember that at all?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, Chris Collinsworth did hit him, but, you know, it's always the second guy that they catch. And Derek Burroughs retaliated, and they caught Derek Burroughs, and I think they did end up throwing him out of the game.
Yeah, I think so.
But, you know, I think you can probably get a pretty good understanding of how Chris Collinsworth is. Just listen to him talk on the television.
Thurman, what do you think about Johnny Manziel for the Buffalo Bills?
Who?
Johnny Manziel.
Manziel.
Johnny Football, Texas A&M.
Johnny Football.
You know what? I don't know, Murph.
Yeah.
I really don't.
I don't think we need a quarterback. You know, I honestly don't think we're going to be in the market for a quarterback next year, Thurman.
That guy's the best quarterback I've seen in college in a long time.
Yeah, and it's
there's been a lot of great college quarterbacks that have played great in college, and when they get to the NFL, it's a whole new different story.
It is a different story. I don't think we're going to – I don't know, Thurman. Do you think the Bills will be looking to draft another quarterback next May?
I hope not.
I don't think so.
I think these last six games will tell a lot about EJ. You know what? The guy's missed some time. Just give it a chance. You know what? The thing that really upsets is I know the Buffalo fans are starving for a quarterback to come in here. And as soon as he doesn't play well, oh, we need to draft this guy or trade for this guy. Just give it some time, you know.
Yeah.
Just give it some time. And I'm sure Russ and Doug Wayne and Coach Monroe, you know what, they're going to evaluate all these positions at the end of the year through the draft, through, you know, whatever. You know, they're going to evaluate every single player on this squad. And if they feel that, hey, we need to draft a quarterback or whatever in the third or fourth round, so be it. But I think right now you have to give the guy a chance to play. He hasn't played. He's played six games. And so I just still think you have to give the guy a chance. He's the guy that they picked, and obviously they saw something in him that they wanted him to be on this football team.
Here's a call from Andy in Hamburg. Hello, Andy. You're on the air with Thurman Thomas.
Good evening, men. And, John, thanks for bringing good sports radio back to Buffalo.
You're welcome.
Thanks for bringing good sports radio back to Buffalo.
Oh, thank you. That's awfully nice. Thanks.
Thurman, this one is about the enthusiasm that the Bills lacked against Pittsburgh. When Bird intercepted that ball early in the game, brought it back to the 28-29-yard line, the Bills were ready to take that ball game by the throat. And offensively, I think the team blew it by calling a running play instead of going right to the end zone.
What do you think of that, Thurman?
They lost their chance at being enthusiastic on that call.
What do you think, Thurman?
Well, you know what, John? when you look at it, sure, Pittsburgh has an aging secondary,
mm-hmm.
but they were also giving up 130 yards on the ground too. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we got two of the best two back tandem in the National Football League. And I think it was a turnover. If we punch in seven instead of three, I think it's a different ball game. So they wanted to be physical, and obviously the offensive linemen and the defensive linemen of the Bills, I think they got outplayed by the offensive and defensive linemen of the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, they had been going through some problems the past couple of weeks. Mike Tomlin called out those guys and, you know, had just given up the most points in franchise history. So, there's a little pride that has to be said for the Pittsburgh Steelers coming into that football game that they weren't going to let that happen again. And you look at the record from, you know, Dick LeBeau. Dick LeBeau is now 17-2 against rookie quarterbacks. I mean, I'm sure he's done his job on the Bills offense, EJ, CJ, Freddie. But I think, and you listen to the players over there, they cannot get off to these slow starts all the time.
Yeah.
Instead of getting three, they got to get seven. I think if they get seven, you know, at the beginning of that football game, I think it's a whole different entirely football game.
Yeah, I agree with you, Thurman. You know, and I said this and actually wrote this on the website. You know how people always say, well, they're a young team, they got to learn how to win. And when you say that, typically you think of, like, end-of-game situations. I thought last Sunday it was a young team that didn't recognize at the beginning of the Steelers game that there was a chance to win there. They didn't, with the drive start at the 29, the next one from the Steelers 44, the next one from their own 44. The game was right there on a silver platter for them, and this team was too young and too inexperienced to go snatch it in the first quarter. I thought that was a big problem.
Yeah, and you hear Coach Marone, and the last couple of weeks that I've been over to practice, you know, one of the things that he always comes up to me and say, I just cannot understand why we can't get off to a fast start mm-hmm. when we have such great field position. And it's been that way, you know, throughout the year where they have actually started slow just about in every single football game. And you can't have that in the National Football League, especially with the field position that they've had in the past couple of weeks and starting, you know, last week with Pittsburgh, like you just mentioned, where they were. You know, you get 14 points there, you get 10 points there. It's a different ball game. So hopefully they'll be able to correct it. It's going to be tough coming up here. The Jets have been playing really good on defense. So, you know, hopefully, these guys can come out today and get a fast start at home.
And one more call for Thurman Thomas from Tom in North Tonawanda. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
How you doing, guys? Hey, Thurman. Good to talk to you.
How's it going?
Good. I've been a fan for a long time. Had season tickets when you, Jim, and Andre and all them were lighting up the scoreboard, and I find it kind of interesting listening to the talk shows today, the way the things have been for the Bills recent years. And I tell guys to talk to, I said, I remember when the biggest complaint the fans had after the Bills games was, why do they score so quickly? Why are they putting the defense back out on the field? I remember those days. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. And we used to hear it all the time from Bruce and Cornelius and Darrell.
I said, they score too quick. I said, what? My, how times have changed. Hey, it's good talking to you. And as far as I'm concerned, you're the best back in the history of the Buffalo Bills.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for calling. Thurm, I want to ask you this. You know, it's the Bills' rivals, the New York Jets. But when you played, or even now, when you think of the Bills' greatest rivals, I would imagine when you played, you would think of the Dolphins. Where did the Jets stack up in your estimation as, you know, a team that Buffalo Bills and the fans should consider rivals? Are the Jets real rivals for the Bills or not that much?
I don't think so much. They weren't really a rivalry back then. And neither were the New England Patriots. I mean,
right.
we pretty much dominated those teams. And, we pretty much dominated Miami, too. But that was a real rivalry for us. The Jets were a different ball club. They were a different team. We felt like we can handle, you know, the Jets when we played them. But I think it was more of even a bigger deal, you know, when we played up there in New York, you know, the mm-hmm. media capital of the world, you know. Being in New York and playing the Jets or the Giants, you know, so I don't really think that the Jets were a rivalry. They were just a team that was just in our way.
Thurman, great talking with you. We'll talk again next week. Thank you very much.
All right, buddy. Have a great night.
You too. Thurman Thomas, the Hall of Fame running back, joins us most Wednesday nights here on the show. We're going to talk to another Bills alumnus coming up. He's going to be the leader of the charge this Sunday. He's going to be the guy waving the Bills flag when the Bills take the field against the New York Jets this Sunday. Former Bills tight end Jay Riemersma will be joining us when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here until 9 o'clock tonight with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Bills, Jets on Sunday. You heard Sal just talk about it. And when the Bills take the field on Sunday to play the Jets, right above the tunnel end, the leader of the charge will be there waving the Buffalo Bills flag. And all this year, the Bills have brought in distinguished alumni members to be the leader of the charge. And the guy who's going to do it this week spent 7 seasons in a uniform with the Buffalo Bills, total of 9 years overall in the National Football League. He is on the line with us right now, former Bills tight end Jay Riemersma, the leader of the charge this weekend. Jay, how are you? Good talking with you tonight.
Hey, great to talk to you, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, and it's good to hear your voice. You've been away from the Bills since 2002 season. Have you been back to Buffalo, been back to a Bills game since then?
I have not. It's been way too long. I'm looking forward to being down there and seeing a lot of good friends.
What do you think about this leader of the charge concept? How do they explain it to you? What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's fantastic. You know, it's an opportunity for us that have – you know, been a part of the Bills organization for so many years to come back and to give back a little bit to the community and to the fan base there. And so, you know, for me personally, selfishly, it's going to be great. I haven't had my kids actually coming back and actually understanding what I did for a living for a number of years there in Buffalo. So it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, it's funny you say that because the number of guys we've talked to who've come back as the leaders of the charge this year and even going back to last year have said almost the exact same thing. Their kids are a little bit grown up. Their kids were either not around or maybe were babies when they played here with the Buffalo Bills. And to get a chance to bring their kids here to see in, you know, the high regard that their dad has held in the city where they played pro football, a lot of guys think that's a pretty special feeling. You got to be looking forward to that.
I sure am. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you a quick story. I had the opportunity here because there's a local guy by the name of Kirk Cousins, who's the backup quarterback for the Washington Redskins.
Sure.
And he kind of made his way up there, and he's currently the backup quarterback there. And so my son had an opportunity to go to his football camp and actually meet him and get a book signed by him and some autographs and that kind of stuff. He came back that dinner at night. He looked at my wife, Kara, and he says, "Hey, Mom, you won't believe it. I get to meet a real live NFL football player tonight." And, you know, we kind of joked about it, but, you know, he doesn't remember any of that. And, you know, Kara looked at him and said, "Well, son, you know, your dad actually played a little bit too." And he's like, "No, I mean a real one."
That's almost got to break your heart a little bit when you hear that, I would think.
You know, actually, I think it's pretty cool because what he's saying is, you know what, that guy over there, he's just dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately, that's what it's about.
Yeah. Jay, 3 children, is that what you and your wife have now in Michigan?
Yep, we have 3 beautiful children, ages 13, 10, and 8, Sophia, Tripp, and Nick, and they'll all be with me. So I'm looking forward to it.
That sounds great. Jay Riemersma is our guest, the former Bills tight end. He's going to be the leader of the charge Sunday when the Bills take the field to play the New York Jets this Sunday. You know, I forgot. I was doing a little research, Jay, before we talked to you. I forgot that you went to Michigan, your hometown or your home state university, but you went there as a quarterback. You were recruited by Gary Moeller to play quarterback for the Wolverines, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was kind of the classic drop-back style quarterback. Certainly wouldn't running any option or anything like that in high school. But back in the day, Michigan was looking for, you know, big, tall guys that could throw the ball a ton. And I kind of fit that mold. And so I went there on a full ride scholarship, fully anticipating being the next quarterback at the University of Michigan. But the Lord had a different plan, and it was divine intervention because I tore my rotator cuff and my throwing shoulder, which kind of ended my quarterbacking days. But ultimately, it parlayed into a 9-year NFL career, and 7 of which I spent in Buffalo and just had the thrill of a lifetime playing there in front of Buffalo's fans.
And your Michigan quarterback became a teammate too here, right? Todd Collins, you played with him at Michigan, right?
Yep, sure did, yep.
Hey, Jay, tell me about the back. I mean, I know, you know, it's a little bit different now. There are only seven rounds in the draft. But when you were drafted to the Bills in the seventh round, did you feel like you had a good chance to make the roster, or were seventh rounders in that stage maybe afterthoughts, maybe, you know, on the fence as far as making an NFL roster?
You know, I certainly felt like I didn't have a chance. You know, one of my first experiences when I came there as a draftee is I went to a rookie camp, and I saw this guy walking up the tunnel, and as we were going out for practice, and I turned back to one of the guys, and I said, "Who's that guy?" And they said, "Well, that's Andre Reed." And my goodness, his guns were as big as my thighs, and I thought, if that guy plays wide receiver in the NFL, I got no chance. But you know what? I think through discipline, hard work, and just, you know what, being a smart, savvy football player, you know, if you do those things and you're disciplined and you work hard, you can earn a spot, and certainly that's what I tried to do.
You know, that was an era when the Bills, I think because of John Butler, the general manager, had a pretty good string of success with late-round draft picks. You and I believe Kurt Schultz was a seventh-round pick. They knew what they were doing in those late rounds, and they knew under Marv Levy, they knew to take a look at the guys that they drafted in the later rounds. They weren't, they weren't biased when it came to late-round guys, were they?
No, they certainly, and you know what, Mr. Butler, Mr. Wilson, and, the entire Bills coaching staff really took a shot on me, and I will always be indebted to them, and because, you know, they took a look at me and thought, hey, I had potential and that kind of stuff, but ultimately, you know, at that level, as you well know, you got to perform and you got to do the right things, and, you know, one thing they knew that I was going to show up on time and not have any missed assignments, and, usually that helps you out. And you know what? Those kind of guys come to the front of the line when you kind of, you know, when the rosters are being cut and that type of thing. So.
Yeah, you survived and actually thrived in the great quarterback controversy that was going on around, the turn of the century. It sounds odd to say that, but Flutie and Johnson, and yet in 2001, 53 receptions for the Bills, 590 yards. It apparently didn't matter to you who was playing quarterback back then for the Bills.
No, it really didn't, as long as I was on the receiving end of it and we were winning ball games. One of the things that I think helped me in my transition from quarterback to tight end was the fact that I played quarterback before. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of had an understanding of concepts. You know, some guys come up and they run a 10-yard out only because the coach tells them to, rather than understanding what the full concept of the play is and the timing of the play and all that kind of stuff. And so, looking back on it, you know, when I say it was divine intervention, it was. I mean, you kind of see how, you know, your past kind of helps you right where you're at. And, so that was certainly the case for me in my career.
You know, the injuries began to crop up on you. Was it difficult when the Bills finally did let you go in 2003, Jay?
Yeah, it was. You know, to be perfectly honest, it stung a little bit. And, you know, I understand that ultimately business decisions need to be made. But, my love for the Buffalo Bills and that community and the fan base is that's where my home is. You know, I really believe as a NFL football player, when people ask me where I played, I mentioned Buffalo first, mainly because they gave me my first shot. And secondly, we spent the most time there. But, that's where my fond memories are. And we'll continue to be, and I have a special place in my heart for Buffalo and the community.
In fact,
Mr. Wilson for giving me a shot.
In fact, Jay, I've read where you have cited almost in your life since playing football, the experience of playing before the Buffalo crowd, the people that you met here. I've read quotes where you've said that was important in your post-football career, what you learned from the fans and the people here in Buffalo.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one thing you know about Buffalo Bills fans is that they are dedicated. They are a hardworking community. And I think that that's one of the reasons that I was accepted by the community. And because that's kind of the background of the community I came from here in West Michigan. You know, we're not born with silver spoons in our mouths around here. We're not a big city or anything like that. But one of the things we got to fall back on is our work ethic and are disciplined, and I can certainly see those kind of elements in the Buffalo community at large.
Since football, Jay, I know you made a run for Congress, the U.S. Congress, not too many years ago. Tell me about that and what else you've been doing since your football days ended.
Well, I ran for Congress in 2010. I was always a part of a pretty politically active family. My folks were ones that sat around the dining room table and talked about the politics of the day and who was making the decisions, whether it be in Washington, D.C. or in our community. And so I was always active in that respect, and it was always interesting to me. And so I went to work for, after I retired from playing in the NFL, I went to work for a family policy organization based in Washington, D.C. that tries to promote life and marriage and traditional family values and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I was friends with the congressman, and he decided to run for the governor, Michigan's governor. And so that left an open seat. And it was kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and he encouraged me to take a look at it. And I ran and lost by 600 votes. Out of 106,000 cast, but I'm not bitter a bit, John.
That's a close one. Did you ever? Would you ever consider doing that again, running for elective office again?
Well, you know, like I said, it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. No, I will never say never, but you know, the way that I lost, it really stung a little bit, and some of the things that they said, which ultimately turned out not to be true. But that's politics.
Sure.
You know, I understand that, but. You know, I won't say never, but certainly not in the cards right now for me and my family.
And you still work
besides
with...
Besides that, John, who wants to be in Washington, D.C. right now?
Good point. Very good point. You still do work with, it's called the Family Research Council, is that it, Jay?
Yeah, that's right, yep.
And what kind of work is that?
Well, it's a nonprofit organization, so in my role, what I kind of do is I manage the field team that goes out there and raises the resources and the funds to promote those policies that we think will kind of heal our nation and that type of thing. And so in corporate terms, I'm oversee the sales force or that team, but in nonprofit terms, I'm the nasty fundraiser.
Okay, which is necessary. Well,
we're
all looking forward to having you here this Sunday. I know a lot of Bills fans remember fondly your seven seasons in a Bills uniform, and I think it's great you're going to bring your kids along, and they can also see what Bills football is all about and what you were a part of for so many years.
That's right, John. We're looking forward to it. We can't wait till Sunday. Go Bills.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks for coming on the air with us tonight.
Thank you. Have a wonderful night.
Jay Riemersma, 7 years with the Buffalo Bills, a couple of years with the Pittsburgh Steelers following that. He's going to be the leader of the charge this Sunday when the Bills take the field against the New York Jets. Take a break. Come back with more. You can still phone in your thoughts on the question we put on the table. What's the fix for the Buffalo offense? They've been in a stall for about 2 or 3 weeks now. What is it? Is it quarterback? Do they need better quarterback play? Do they need simply to give C.J. Spiller more carries? Is it better offensive line play? How do you fix what's ailing the Buffalo offense? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Lines are open. 803-0550, the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're here till 9 o'clock tonight, and following us tonight, Matthew Collar will be live at our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, to talk more about the Sabres' big moves today, and you can phone in comments and questions for him. Matthew Collar will be there till midnight tonight once we sign off in just a few minutes. We do have time for more of your calls and comments, your questions and thoughts on the Buffalo offense, the Bills offense, what's gone wrong, how to fix it. 803-0550, the number, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. And if you're interested in more on the Bills and news of the day, you can check out buffalobills.com right now. Bills Roundup is up, a video feature from Chris Brown and yours truly on today's events, the injuries today, and some of the issues today around the Buffalo Bills. I want to thank Jay Riemersma for joining us tonight. Jay joined us via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway restaurants with a special offer for Bills fans when the Bills score 20 points or more at home this year. Visit buffalobills.com after all home games for details. Subway, eat fresh. A call on the line from Dave in Amherst. Hello, Dave. You're on the air. Dave in Amherst. Are you there, Dave? Yes.
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I want to thank all of our veterans and people who have served. It's their week. Thank you so much for that. As far as spicing up the Bills' offense, I think that Coach Hackett needs to get a little more creative with the play calling, especially in the last game. I think the play calling has been very predictable. I know it was windy in Pittsburgh, but the run-run-pass scenario made us a victim to the Pittsburgh defense, because I think that they knew what we were doing all game long.
So what would you do?
Also,
pass, run?
Well, no, I need you just you do something to a couple of surprising plays or something out of the box offensively. Okay. The other thing they really need to work on over the course of the season, we seem to be at a loss of plays when we're inside the five, our goal line offense. We get down there and they run a couple of run plays right into the teeth of the line. I think that they need to figure out some plays that are more creative, whether it's tackle eligibles, even do something as creative as letting the legend of Alonzo go in and line up as tight end or something. Something to make us a little bit more effective.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call, Dave. They are on to the fact that they have struggled in short yardage situation and opponents inside the five-yard line. They're on to it. Doug Marrone talked about it again today. He almost indicated that it's eating them up, how they failed in short yardage. And it's been a couple of weeks now where that's been a problem against Kansas City and against the Steelers last week. And as Marrone pointed out, they're pretty good out in the field, when you're outside of the red zone and third and short situations, which are very similar to goal line situations except for the compressed field. But they're on it. They're trying to find the solution. I don't know if it's as simple as I don't think it's a play calling thing. When the play doesn't work, it's the wrong play, clearly, and that sort of the comes with the territory when you're a play caller in the NFL. I don't think it's as simple as give C.J. Spiller the ball more often. I really don't. He needs to be healthy, number one, and he needs to run well, number two, and they need to block for him first and foremost, and most importantly, I think to me the key to the Buffalo Bills offense is to get better quarterback play. Didn't have it when E.J. was out. Didn't have it really strong quarterback play when E.J. played last Sunday. I'm looking forward to better quarterback play from E.J. Manuel down the stretch, including this Sunday, starting this Sunday. Let's see. We'll talk about it more tomorrow night. Tomorrow night on the show, Robert Woods will join us, Bills wide receiver. We'll talk with him about the offensive issues. And, of course, Friday we're on the podcast. So tune in tomorrow night. We are on the air on the radio, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer, Mike Jafari, our producer, the maestro, Russ Burton, and the Bills director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. Matthew Collar up next with more Sabre talk on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7 with the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.